Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And Paradigm Shifters, as I say every week, are people making a difference in the collective of our species on the planet at this time, well known as the shift. And today we're shifting paradigms with a wonderful astrologer and someone who knocked you onto the edges of your seats the last few times she was on. And I don't think, Linda Sherman, you've been on since the time of the election, have you?
And no, I haven't.
Well, heavens, there's a lot of disruptions going on out there, so I suddenly thought of you and went, you know, I think we need Linda's soothsaying perspectives to help us through these crazy times on the planet. So, Linda, my question to you is, what's next?
Well, that's, of course, the title of my book.
Right. I thought I could use, like, two words in place of many. That was pretty clever, wasn't it?
Yes. Well, I think all of us who are listening to this show realize how serious the crises are in our civilization today, which we're facing. Pretty much a crashing economy, massive unemployment, foreclosures, bankruptcies, a demolition ball taken to what was called the middle class in this country.
And one of the things that I'm confused about is the blatant corruption that we seem powerless to do anything about.
Yes. Well, I think we are going to have to start at the grassroots and reclaim our power. But at this moment in time, there's no question that Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, Morgan Stanley, the big financial entities, are wielding their power in that they finance presidential campaigns, and there are more lobbyists in Washington by far than there are congressmen. So I think even more disturbing is the recent decision by our Supreme Court ruling that the giant corporations, even foreign corporations such as Chinese oil or Saudi oil corporations, giant global hedge funds, can now advertise to their heart's content for individual candidates running for office.
Oh my!
In this country, I always say the banksters, big pharma, big oil, giant insurance companies who populate Washington with their multiple lobbyists now have unlimited funds to dominate media campaigns. And I want to say it's not that they are allowed to give unlimited amounts to a candidate, but the court ruled that it would be a violation of freedom of speech if a corporation was not allowed to take its own money and put an ad on for a person running for office. For instance, if, let's say, a big health insurance company does not want health care reform in Washington, they can absolutely sweep the nation with ads on television and everywhere, on the internet, on television and magazines and everything, pro a certain candidate who is on their side that also does not want health care insurance reform.
So it's heavily weighted by moolah, by money.
It's as I said in my book, we're no longer the Republicans and the Democrats. We're the party of big bucks. It's a one-party system in Washington. And this is
it's not just Washington, though, is it? It's a global economic reality, isn't it?
Well, it is because mainly of what the United States did. The United States and their policies and the big financial entities here are at the center or the core of the global economic collapse. You take smaller nations like Iceland, Ireland, Greece, Portugal, these nations that have recently pretty much declared insolvency or bankruptcy, you might say, they were loaded up with these subprime mortgages and bad derivatives bets that were sold from our institutions. And when they went under, so did these entities went under.
Well, I think you should explain to our listeners, just in case some of them are new, what derivatives really are.
Well, basically what a derivative is, there are many different types of derivatives, and some of them are complex, but let's distinguish what a derivative contract is versus suppose you wanted to buy stock. Mm-hmm. Say you wanted to buy stock at IBM, and you would go to your broker, and you have an account there, and he buys you stock. So you own a piece of IBM. You know, you bought the stock.
Right.
That's a direct investment in that company. Derivatives are bets. Usually you go to hedge funds or you could do this privately, which is kind of disastrous, what we call the over-the-counter derivatives, is that you can buy a put, what they call a put, which is a bet that something is going to go down, or a call, which is a bet that something can go up.
Hmm.
And so you're not investing in anything. You're betting on something.
We're all at the racetrack.
Exactly. Now, these derivatives, they served a purpose at one time in the commodities market. They originated, for instance, say, a person, a farmer, or say a bank who lent money to a farmer who was, say, a soybean farmer. And suppose that soybean farmer gets flooded out and loses his entire crop. So the bank loses their money, the farmer loses his money. What this kind of derivative is, they could buy the farmer and the bank could buy a put on the soybean crop to protect themselves against a massive loss if they couldn't make any money off of the crop.
So it's kind of like an insurance bet.
It was kind of an insurance policy. And you've heard the term hedge funds. Hedge funds are funds that deal in going both ways.
Okay.
So this served a purpose. It had a place in the scheme of things. Also, if people wanted to gamble a little bit on something, if they saw something coming ahead, I'll give you a personal example. Back in the late 1980s, as an astrologer, I saw what I thought was going to be a crash in the Nikkei, which is the Japanese stock market. Remember in the 80s, Japan was flying high?
Mm-hmm.
They thought Japan and Germany were going to take over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that far back? Some of our young people don't. But
I remember
very well that these were the countries that were going to, that were so profitable and the Japanese were doing everything. And the Japanese bought up a whole lot of American real estate, which when the real estate crash of the early 90s, late 80s took place, they lost, and they got in very heavily into this sort of thing. Well, at any rate, we know the Japanese economy has been stagnant now for well over a decade. At that time, I looked at the chart of Japan, and I said, oh my God, the Japanese are going to get hit very, very hard in the late 80s, early 90s, that there were certain planets hitting their astrological chart. Plus, my husband at the time was doing some research on gold and finance and things, and there was a newsletter he was getting that was warning us that the Nikkei was going to take a spin down, a major. And what very often happens is an event like in 9/11 here, the stock market crashed right after 9/11 because of the fear that happens. And usually a big, big, big event will trigger something that's about to fall off the cliff anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1990, when Saddam Hussein, I have to say in 1988, my husband and I purchased what we call put options on the Nikkei, betting against the Japanese stock market. And we bought 3-year put options. You can get them for different lengths of time. When they either expire, you have to exercise the option. So we bought these put options on the Nikkei in 1988. In 1990, when Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait and we entered the first Gulf War, the Japanese stock market crashed.
So you made a bundle?
Well, we didn't have a bundle to put in.
Literally to put.
You put a bundle in to make a really, but we made a substantial amount of return on our, because we got in when the market was almost at a peak. and then we exercised our options, of course, when it crashed. So if we had more money, I would probably be sitting on my boat off the Hawaiian shore right now.
Yeah, I'm glad that you're at work here with us because we need some more information. And so what's happening? We keep hearing about the shift, and it seems like the global economics thing is building up to kind of a central boil. Doesn't it look like that?
It is.
And what's happening right now?
Well, one of the major criteria that we astrologers are using at the moment is the Saturn-Pluto square, which is in effect between, and there's also been a Saturn-Uranus opposition, which is taking place again in the spring. And these Saturn-Pluto square and Saturn-Uranus oppositions are climaxing on July 26th of this year before the Saturn-Pluto square, and then the last square of Saturn. Basically, I have to say that square is being joined by Mars and there are other planets and Jupiter and Uranus.
And this is for your birthday, right?
It's on my birthday.
It's a universal celebration for you. So what does
yes,
it actually
exactly.
mean?
Well, I must have done something pretty bad in my last life for this to happen. But Pluto squares Saturn also for the last time in August of 2010. So roughly between now and August of 2010, we're under the gun for these tremendously high stress angles. Now, what does that mean? It means that the establishment, the powers that be, the big, I call them the financialists, the economic fundamentalists, are definitely in control. The public at large is now catching on since they've lost everything. You know, so many of the public have lost their homes, their jobs, their way of life and everything, and they're looking around to blame something or somebody. They don't know what hit them.
But yeah, it's fomenting a lot of like massive hate job.
Now, I would say that I predicted in my book that we would be having a second American Revolution between 2010 and 2014 in that period of time. Now, I feel that revolutions historically have not had a good track record. You look at the French Revolution. They wound up killing half of their population, killing even the ones who fomented the revolution killed each other.
Wow.
The Communist Revolution in Russia, the Chinese Communist Revolution, all of these, they committed mass genocides on their own people. They don't really have a very good track record. And the powerful people that they overthrew were replaced by other powerful people who were just as bad or worse. So the American Revolution is quite unique in the sense that that we were separating from Britain. But we look at our founding fathers were a set of the highest levels of intelligence and education and ideals. They were products of what we call today the Age of Enlightenment. And they created a constitution and a Bill of Rights that is just so amazing. Today, the revolutions that are fomenting in this country are people that are just mad and acting crazy and don't know what they're rebelling against or who they're rebelling against.
And are not necessarily educated.
In general, they're not, it's not people of a high degree of intelligence who are thoroughly researching the problem or the issue. So that has me concerned. But I feel that we have these revolutions fomenting. I feel that there's this thing that our economy is recovering. A lot of this economy is being manipulated by powerful people using derivatives that I just described to you. Today, the Bank of International Settlements last published that the global derivatives trade is up to over $250 billion or $1,000 trillion, if you can even get your brain around that.
I can't. It's more than I have.
So there is a – this is going on. And so they're still trying to manipulate things.
So when everything fell apart last year, that was a derivative. That was where there's no substance in all of the betting that was going on. And now you're saying it's greater, is it?
You are exactly right, Veronica.
How did that happen?
there was just no substance. It was like we found out that the mortgages didn't work in 2007. And then we found out that these entities like Lehman Brothers were trading all of these derivatives. They had calls on things that went down. They had bets on stocks and various things that just crashed. And so they lost Merrill Lynch, Lehman Brothers, all these entities. And then you had the big AIG crisis that I was talking about earlier, Goldman Sachs. Could have gone down, possibly, and AIG would have crumbled if the feds hadn't come in and subsidized these entities. Now, the reason they subsidized the entities, while Bush was still president, it was all of their pals were there. They see the world through the eyes of the big bucks people.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. They don't see anything else. They have been raised in an insular upbringing and background, and the government, the people who go to Washington are insulated, but even more so the financialists are insulated. They tell themselves that they are bringing about prosperity. They told themselves that by allowing people to borrow money in the irresponsible way that they did, in making it possible for them to get mortgages that a decade ago they wouldn't even have been able to get,
mm-hmm.
You know, that they could pacify the people at large and they could have home ownership. And when they turned out not to be able to pay those mortgages, it was like a deluge. So all of that added up to a stock market crash and the failure or close to failure of many of the biggest financial institutions in our country and, in fact, in the world in the fall of 2008.
So they fell because of massive deception.
Yes.
And corruption. But I just want to ask one thing, is why after the Enron collapse did this stuff still just keep right on happening? And why is it keeping on happening right now? I know that's a big question to ask an astrologer.
Yes, that is a wonderful question. And that's a question many of us who knew what was happening kept asking. After Enron and WorldCom and those scandals, you know, right after 9/11 and around in that period of time, but you see what had happened in the last years of the Clinton administration. There were three people who were really in control of the global economy: Robert Rubin, Alan Greenspan, and Lawrence Summers. Lawrence Summers, does that sound familiar to you?
Yes.
Obama's advisor, right?
Right.
And Timothy Geithner was the head of the New York Federal Reserve. Now, these Rubin and Greenspan and Summers pushed two things: getting rid of the Glass-Steagall Act,
right,
which had separated financial banking from regular lending type banking. This subprime thing would not have taken place if Glass-Steagall. We've had real estate ups and downs and scams before. Remember the one in the early 90s. But it would never have happened to this degree if we still had Glass-Steagall. They got rid of it. And
people didn't complain. People didn't fight back?
No.
Oh.
And secondly, this was in 1999, I believe, they passed a law that got rid of the Glass-Steagall, so that financial banking could do lending banking and vice versa. Everybody could do anything.
And they kept the people busy looking after Y2K.
Right, exactly. So the second thing was that they proposed this Commodities Modernization Act. I love these titles for things. You know. And this took all controls off of derivatives.
Hmm.
Trading.
Hmm.
And Summers was behind it. In fact, he was selling derivatives all over the world before the great crash took place.
Wow.
These people are in a culture that is as insulated and arrogant, elitist and privileged as the monarchies were in the old days.
Hmm.
I mean, these people are saying, let them eat cake. And I'm afraid that they're going to have the same fate, except that monarchs were easily visible. King Louis and Marie Antoinette were eventually executed, you know, and in the French Revolution. These people are, there's a group of them, and they have other homes in Panama or Costa Rica that they can flee to, and they are less visible, upfront, and less accountable. Not only the CEOs, but other hedge fund managers and various people, they're in a kind of a culture that they really believe in. They think this is free market capitalism. Everyone should leave them alone. Forget the greater good. The whole end is profit at any cost. And betting, derivatives have made them huge amounts of money.
So, but the fact that they have even more now after that big crash, how did that happen? Is there no checks and balances?
Because there are no laws preventing this. There's no, since Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980, in this period, one restriction and law after another has been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
The philosophy of the right-wing Republicans, starting with Reagan, was get the government out at all costs. So the policing in general of the financial system. See, we have a country, the founding fathers talked about checks and balances. That's why we have three portions to our government. And each is the executive, the legislative, and the judicial. And we have freedoms in the private sector, but checked by the government or the public sector. And then the public sector is checked by the private sector. In other words, these balances. Well, the balances were taken, all these things were just gradually over a period of time taken away. Mm-hmm. And the power of the people was removed, basically. Now, you can still go and vote for somebody, but if your information that you're getting is dominated by a handful of corporations who now can put ads up for their favorite candidate.
So it's like with Obama, we were all so excited, but he was paid for by some of the very people that ran the derivatives. Is that right? Am I understanding?
At the end of Obama's campaign, Goldman Sachs contributed more to his single campaign than they have ever contributed to any presidential campaign.
Which means they own him. Is that right?
Yes and no. I'm still not totally convinced that Obama is owned by this bunch as George W. Bush was, because George mm-hmm. W. Bush was born and bred in the cabal, as mm-hmm. I call them.
Mm-hmm.
I think he made a kind of Faustian bargain. I also think that President Obama was dangerously naive about what was going on in this economy.
Yes.
And he felt that these guys were the only ones that could understand the circuitousness and complexity of the global financial cabal, like hire the ones who did it to undo it because they're the only ones that could untie the Gordian knot. That's my take on it. I think he was wrong,
mm-hmm.
personally.
Because the machine itself is too strong, huh?
Well, what he didn't take into account is how utterly Lawrence Summers was always considered to be brilliant and a genius and all of this thing. He was a genius at schemes.
Oh, wow.
And I don't doubt that, but he was, no matter how smart you are, when you are immersed in a particular type of culture and surrounded by other guys like you, you're going to see the world through those eyes, and you're going to justify your evil deeds.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, you know, you're going to ignore the obvious that this has happened over and over again before. It happened in 1929. These same kind, when you open the doors, take the regulatory laws away, and allow that the people will get into gambling and they'll use everything in sight. This is what has happened. But as an astrologer, I feel that we had that with Pluto squared to Saturn, the established group, including the majority of members in the Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts never met a corporation that he didn't rule in favor of.
Hmm.
And these people, to pass it, they ignored all preceding laws around campaign finance reform to make this decision, allowing these corporations to just literally have limitless funds to advertise for any candidate they want. And this is part of this thing. There are the powerful people who are in this culture, in this group, are going to do everything they can to use everything they can to keep justice from really being made, to keep their buddies in nice silk neckties and solar houses on the coast of Costa Rica.
So
I know I'm sounding very jaded about this, but I really think that this has been my impression. This is a result of a lot of research that I've done. And as an astrologer, I saw this coming. Mm-hmm. And right now, the established, they're banging up against one another. But I also think that they're our power wars. Saturn square Pluto is power wars. And among the rich and the powerful, the politically well-placed, there's a lot of infighting going on. The Democrats and Republicans are just absolutely fighting each other. There's nothing getting done. And I think the members of the cabal, say Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase, are also at odds or at war with each other.
Just let me ask you this. Isn't the Pluto thing for good or ill? Meaning, if there's a power thing going on, isn't there also kind of a rising drive for authentic power? Or, I mean, isn't there both sides of the question? Isn't there a push?
That's a really good question. But my impression of Pluto is when it goes into certain really intense signs and makes certain stressful aspects with other planets, is that you really initially see the destructive side of it first.
And what signs are...
Pluto is in Capricorn and will be until 2024.
Oh my, that's quite a while.
Yes, and I believe between 2024 and 2026 is when we're going to see the birth of a new civilization, a new, completely new set of economic paradigms. We will have a new form of energy. We'll be operating sustainably. But between now and then, there's going to be a tremendous amount of destruction of economies, of countries, and units of power are going to be pitted against each other.
So that includes the personalities and ego and lineages as well, doesn't it?
You are absolutely right. In fact, lineage is a very good term to use because many of these people come from families who have been in this powerful economic group for quite a few generations. Hmm. And it is. These are lineages. And yes, I think that they will be pitted again. And some people do have a conscience. So some of them may be saying, hey, you know, maybe we ought to do something different, but the others are going to stand up against whoever those lone voices are.
But isn't Saturn all about karma as well, or rules and regulations?
Saturn to me is a planet about structure.
Okay.
It's about structure. It's ruthlessly realistic on the material physical plane. It's how something is structured, how it is constructed. Is not how it might be constructed. It's not about theory. It's not about idealism. It's about what it is right now, how something is. It rules government structures, corporate structures, even land structures. And we're heading into a major cycle of earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, as recently exemplified by the earthquake in Haiti. And that is only the beginning. We have a series of those things going on, too, where tectonic plates rub up against each other. And that is very good illustration for how power units in government and industry will be creating earthquakes by rubbing up against one another. And we all know that the one thing for sure about life and existence as we know it is change. And what this is evoking is a dramatic change. Just as the American Revolution evoked huge change, not only here but in the world at large. But it had to fight a revolutionary war. And also the founding fathers and the people involved in building our nation were all at odds with each other. Most of them were.
And why? Just is it ego stuff or is it ideological material?
I think it's all of the above. People, there was a wonderful person, I can't remember who, I think a great wise person once says, cease to cherish your beliefs.
I think that's so true.
Cherish their beliefs. They cherish what they, their reality. And what the mandate is going to be is we've got to get rid of these previous realities, these previous structures around economies, around the way we are with the planet Earth. We have been cannibalizing the planet. We're using up our resources. We're using up our land, our water, our oil, our gas, our topsoil.
And another thing that we're doing is we're squashing innovative approaches to alternative ways of providing energy and so on because of that megalithic economic control. Is that not right?
That is true. Mm-hmm. In this country, they're doing a lot more of this in Europe.
And China, apparently, they're doing a lot.
China has made a major, major commitment to them, to this. But they're up against China. Is up against the fact that they have so polluted their environment that you can't breathe the air or drink the water. They are up against extreme ecological disasters that they're going to be facing as a result of their mountain glaciers have melted that have fed their major rivers, the Yangtze and Yellow Rivers, for many thousands of years. Combined with because of global warming, combined with factory pollutants that have gone into these rivers. So China is, and they're trying desperately now to take the money that they have and put it into becoming the major place to make solar panels and windmills. They've just made a deal with Vestal Windmills, which is a British corporation, to make windmills over there. So there's no question China's making a big investment right now, but they're in so much trouble ecologically. I don't know that they can reverse what they have done to themselves and what is being done to them.
Well, it's really interesting because we're talking about collectives of human consciousness. Whether it's what my guides call the oligarchy, which is the rulership of many by a few for some pretty nefarious reasons, or whether we're talking about China, or whether we're talking about economy or politics or energy. But I keep learning that there's a shift going on and there's a rising consciousness coming up through humanity. I'm sure that if that's so, and the way I was taught, it will rise amongst people, even people in the military, not everyone at the same time. But there is a rising tide of consciousness. Would you agree with that, or do you see that?
I agree with that completely. This has been my observation, is that the people, most of the people, not all, but most of the people in positions of power today are hanging on to the old paradigm, and they're going to go down with that sinking ship and unfortunately take a lot of innocent people who don't know what hit them down with them.
And do you mean that's through the destruction of the homes and securities?
Yes, there's
and
going
the...
to be, you know, this more economic destruction ahead, more serious crises both in climate and in the economy ahead of us. So we... There's just going to be many, many lives that are either destroyed or compromised severely as a result of the people in these positions of power. That's always happened. However, what you are saying, my experience is there's a bunch of people out there who care about the greater good, who to them it is obvious that humankind must clean up the planetary damage and live on the planet with respect and love and in a sustainable footprint. There are people out there that believe in the concept of democracy, and they are starting to organize on a local grassroots grassroots level, and many of them are using the wonderful tool of the internet to get in touch, such as this program is broadcast over the internet. But many, I have my own newsletter website, soothsayer.com, that I expounded. I'm now having some guest authors on that website who are experts in their field. And there's so many thousands of newsletters giving out good information and putting people together and organizing them for the greater good. My feeling is there are many, many millions of absolutely wonderful, kind, caring people who are passionate about changing our consciousness on the planet, about operating in a different frequency, in a different resonance, and transforming humankind. And it's sort of a part of a wave in which we are participating. Mm-hmm. And we have to decide, even if we do not know how to get into that, what I like to call a frequency or resonance, which changes your feelings about your existence and the world around you. If you open your heart and your mind to it, it starts to happen for you, and you also start to attract other people who are also, as I call it, singing that song.
It's sort of like surfing, isn't it, where you make yourself aware of the rhythms and get into it.
Exactly, that you ride the wave.
So astrologically, what else is, I mean, I like talking about that, but I want to go back to what's actually going on the planet so we can observe. I think one of the powers is when we get to observe it, but we don't need to eclipse our own personal power with it. You see what I mean?
Yes, I think that one of my dear friends is always saying we have to stand in our own truth.
Oh, that's
good. I've always loved that saying on a personal level. A private level. I have advised my clients and friends and readership over the years to position themselves a certain way, financially, economically, personally. I've given that kind of instruction or advice, which my husband and I did. We took all the advice that I've given my clientele and readership. We got out of debt. The house that we have, we paid cash. We got into gold and silver and some reserves of cash. As I said earlier, we have no debt. We have stored supplies of food and water and medical supplies for we're gradually accumulating so that we could survive maybe 3 years in case the food systems break down. We're trying on a practical level, the level of Saturn, you might say, on a ruthlessly practical level, positioning ourselves to hopefully be able to survive. But what's more important are the wonderful friends that we have made and the loving and caring among this group of friends and the great community that we live in, which is so dedicated to these values and are willing to extend a helping hand to one another. It's the whole atmosphere of where I live in Ithaca, New York is very much like this.
And are they all doing what you're doing, which is husbanding resources? And
yes, that we are surrounded by a culture of organic farming. We have a farmer's market on Lake Cayuga here. We won't run out of water because we're in the Finger Lakes region.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a very much water conservation policies here. And we have the farmer's market. We have a green store which sells the local produce that's thriving. You see that parking lot filled to the brim through all of its hours that it's open. There's a culture supportive of these values here. We have Cornell University, which is a leader in ecology, in farming, in sustainability. In fact, they are working, their research is working with a company that just moved here that has invented a battery that on a nano basis is near 100% efficient. Now, to give you an idea of batteries are usually 15 to 25% efficient.
What kind of a battery is this? Is this just a small, like a DC battery or AA?
Right, right. Or it could be a much larger battery.
Okay.
But if you can solve the energy storage problem, then you can put windmills and solar up. You can put you can put windmills in our western wind corridor from North Dakota down to Texas. You could take the deserts and put huge solar arrays, and because you could store the energy, we could soon have the majority of our energy could be a combination of solar and windmill with none of the others involved.
Hmm.
But the storage problem, well, guess what? This is becoming battery central here.
Oh, great.
And, my husband and I researched where we wanted to go. We have beautiful hills and waterfalls and a gorgeous park system, and the countryside is lovely. There's so much intellectual capital here. There's what I'm saying is that we realize that where progress is going to be made is by individuals deciding to get together with other individuals who share these goals and values, and starting from a grassroots level, starting to live in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're doing. We have a very energy-efficient home. We have a guest apartment. People are coming to see us all the time. We put out container garden last year. We grew organic vegetables in a container on our deck.
Oh, wow, that's great.
And we're going to put up a second one this year. We had no critters invading us, and we didn't get hit by the tomato blight.
So what about the energy efficiency? Like, do you have alternative energy sources there, or is that something you and your husband
are
just...
Well, we could buy solar panels,
mm-hmm.
And we're thinking of making that investment. We haven't done it yet. We've more or less invested in tight windows and insulation and things of that nature. We also have to have backup sources here. We have a gas fireplace that can operate even if your electricity is down, and it will heat the house.
Oh, that's great.
We have an emergency battery in our garage, or a generator, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
We have an emergency generator for emergencies. But our next investment may be to put up solar panels. We want to wait. The technology is constantly evolving in this.
Yeah, because we live in an area where the solar panels, we don't get that much sunshine for a lot of the year, you know. So I just wonder if we would be able to even store enough to run things very much at all.
It probably would not be of as much value to you. We have a lot of cloud cover here as well.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people around here are buying windmills.
Mm-hmm. You have good wind there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. If you have wind quarters, if you have hills, the windmills here, there are electric companies in Pennsylvania, New York, that get part of their energy from windmills. But they're put way up high on the top of treeless hills and mountains because that's where the wind is.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to put the windmills up, but the windmill technology is also evolving more all the time. They're really getting... some of the downside is being removed, and they're getting more and more and more powerful.
So you can actually have a relatively small one and benefit from that? Or
and benefit from it, yes, but you've got to have wind. You have to think, where am I going to put this thing,
mm-hmm.
where it is going? We get a lot of wind up here.
We get a fair amount of wind
on top
as well.
Of the hill.
Yeah, oh, that's great. Well, I want to jump around from that because I think you've given us some thumbnails on how to get started in getting yourself, what would we say, out of the system where we get victimized by greed, I guess, eh? You're giving us a good start on that. But let's talk a bit about education. Can you talk a bit about that? Like, what can people do? I mean, because you and I have had this conversation that many people feel disempowered, and we've lived in a period of the dumbing down of America. Right.
Well, there's two things, and I agree with you, Veronica, there's two things at work. One is that our educational systems here, public and private for the most part, except for a few private schools that have taken, Goddard schools and things that have taken a completely different approach, are a product of the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, I went to Goddard, incidentally.
Oh, hey, I didn't know that. Now I know why your thoughts are so wonderful. Why
well,
you think.
You. But that's it. I think we're talking to people about think. Think. And you have brilliant ideas on that.
Yeah, our school systems don't teach people much to think. They teach people to memorize and get answers correct on a test. They teach them to be employees rather than entrepreneurs.
Right.
And they've eliminated a lot of the better things like arts, music, and gym, things like this that motivate children and where they can be more creative and self-expressive. And the other thing that has been eliminated, not from all schools, but from so many schools, is civics, which was a profoundly important subject to me when I was in junior high and high school. We had courses in civics.
Is that politics?
Yes, mm-hmm. Political science.
Mm-hmm.
I went to my high school mostly, except for my senior year, was in Illinois.
Mm.
And they were doing some terrific things out there in education when I was growing up, back when crustaceans walked the earth.
but it's not that long ago.
But after the war, where this country really committed itself at the end of World War II to education, the GI Bill for the soldiers coming home to get a college education and for public education. And there was a lot of enthusiasm and excitement. But basically, our means of education, except for certain wonderful individual teachers who do different things, is for assembly line workers in the Industrial Revolution. Secondly, we bunch everybody up into groups and have them taking and passing standardized tests. There's very little oriented to individuals and to working with them. How does an individual child learn? Some kids are quite visual, some are auditory, some are sensory. They all, some who even have learning disabilities in one area are almost geniuses in another.
Mm-hmm.
But these differentiations among youngsters get lost in the kind of assembly line education based on going to work for a factory or a corporation all your life.
And I have another bone to pick, which is that the denatured food and the TV keeps them dumber in the head.
Oh, I think that is absolutely true. And that has happened in about the past 20 years, where kids are sitting in front of widescreen TVs or computers playing computer games and eating processed food loaded with high fructose corn syrup and saturated fat.
And a lot of salt.
And now we have a major problem with obesity. And youngsters are getting disease that elder people used to get, like diabetes and high cholesterol and high blood pressure.
And they can't concentrate.
They can't concentrate. And there's two things. The way the computer revolution and the Internet is developing a way of working with the brains and the psyches of kids that we need to look at.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an interesting show on public television the other night about this very thing. I think it was Frontline. And it was on PBS, which is the station I love to watch. And they had two different points of view on the computer revolution and the Internet and how these things that kids don't read books anymore and they are multitaskers and they don't do anything in depth, read anything in depth, think about anything in depth. It's just flitting from one thing to another. There's a whole process of rewiring of the brain that's going on with these youngsters. My feeling is that area needs to be looked at, but I think when you don't get enough physical exercise and you have a poor diet and you're sitting in front of something where you get this kind of instant reflexive gratification, that it's doing much, much more harm than good, and this is what is happening. I mean, the kids have ADD, but a lot of the kids, they don't want to pay attention to what's going on in that classroom when they can go home and play Game Boy.
That's true, but there's some other options here which people complain because, for example, education is so impossibly expensive these days, there are ways of going online and becoming very well educated at home, aren't there?
Yes, there are. There are more and more online degrees, particularly graduate degrees, being and they are approved of. In other words, it's a degree that I forget what the technical term, but it's an acknowledged degree. And they're very difficult. I mean, the work is very intense to get, say, an online master's degree in something.
Okay, so I wanted to ask you this. Is astrologically, is there not something that is showing us that there is a huge advantage coming through media at this time, whether it's Uranus or something of that sort?
Well, the media is just a tool. Television, right. The Internet, all of these things are tools. And they're neither good or bad, any worse than the people using them. How are they using them? For instance, my opinion is that public television, PBS, is a wonderful resource.
You or the Discovery Channel a lot of the time, too. Right?
Yes, and you get certain places to go that are, and you, the History Channel, and you get shows like Nova and you go to National Geographic, you get a tremendous amount of education in these areas, and a lot of learning, wonderful learning, can take place. So I'm not condemning everything. I still say when everything is just for ratings and for profits of a handful of people at the top of the food chain, everything gets dumbed down.
Right.
Our news media is filled with what's Tiger Woods or John Edwards next. Sexcapades.
And our kids get to listen to all of that.
And how many people know that right now a volcano, a major volcano, has been erupting in the Philippines since mid-December, and the area has been evacuated,
wow.
And that there's a civil war going on in the Congo? And how many reports have you heard anywhere about what's going on with Israel and the Palestinians?
Mm.
It's almost like a massive news blackout.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a marketed reality, isn't it?
It is. So we're not really getting, as you said, people are being dramatically dumbed down,
mm-hmm.
and they're sitting there passively rather than moving and doing things physically, and they're sitting there passively, and they're eating all this bad food.
So what's telling me is that we are desperately in need of a revolution of some sort.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I don't mean to be calling forth a revolution, but people need to wake up, wake up, wake up, and realize that they have a lot of tools to empower themselves, right?
They do, and when we as a nation, when people on a local basis band together, and they decide, you know, and they help each other gather, share information and enthusiasm and come up with new ideas and inventions. And when we start to think like this again and we care about what's going on, we no longer are going to feel powerless.
Right.
But in the meantime, with these array of planetary configurations coming up that are hitting certain individual charts like Pakistan, and Mexico. Pakistan and Mexico are both being hit hard this summer by these configurations. India, Afghanistan. There are certain nations that are being hit by these early cardinal sign clashes that are really going to be hit with so many crises, their governments breaking down and tectonic events. And everything. We're going to have to pass through these things. We've got to... The biggest problem is don't let yourself get depressed about it. You can empathize and sympathize and do whatever you can for various people, but you need to tap into your personal passion and love for this planet, for each other, and for the divine presence in the universe of which we are all a part. And if you put that high as the biggest priority of your life, you will experience this whole thing very differently.
Thank you, Linda. And unfortunately, we have to end this, but I'm wondering if you'll come on again, maybe in a month or so?
I would be delighted.
And I want everybody to pay attention to soothsayer.com. That's sooth with an E, S-O-O-T-H-E, sayer.com. And catch up with Linda's musings, which are challenging but really illuminating. And I really appreciate your time, Linda.
Well, thank you.
And all the work you're putting onto the planet, not just your time today, you know.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure to be on your show.
And we will see you very soon.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, that was Linda Sherman. I really love to hear her perspective because sometimes it just is so cluttered out there with what comes through, what kind of information and things falling apart. Gives me a bit of structure, and I hope it does for you. Next week, I'm having Christine Upchurch of the Reconnection, Eric Pearl's Reconnection, and that's going to remind us all how to reconnect to that higher energy that runs through us all, and as Linda said, that divinity that we're all a part of. If you'd like a session with me, call me, Veronica, at, or email me, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com. I'd love to talk with you, and I'll see you on Thursday night at 7 o'clock on Radiance by Design, a call-in show all about you. We're going to do some breathing techniques again to raise our frequency. And at 8 o'clock, we'll be on with Jackie Salvitti and the team. And I love talking with them as well. They're wonderful, wonderful consciousnesses. So this is Veronica Entwistle saying, many blessings, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to Paradigm Shifters. Good night.